So I'm really digging on the David Dingle music. So I hope you are too. David gave me permission to use some of his tracks. And so as a UB brother, I thought it would be cool. And frankly, it fits. I like some of it, so I'm going to continue to use it, at least for these few episodes. And welcome to you on Your Rancher Radio, the podcast. Jim Watkins here. Thanks again to Jerry Johnson for appearing on the last previous podcast where we got a chance to talk to Jerry about her world experiences and also her work with the freeschools.org organization in India, which we are gladly going to make a contribution based on the number of shares that we get of this Your Rancher Radio podcast. So share away. Every time you share the podcast, the podcast publisher provides a little compensation. So we're going to let that ride until the end of the year. And then at the end of the year, if whatever that amount is, we'll double it and we'll give it to the folks at Free Schools. We'll write to Jerry Johnson and her organization a check. And did you know that $300 can support a child for an entire year at this Bihar school for children, teaching them how to read? Isn't that amazing? So anyway, thank you, Jerry, once again, and we will have her on again. Just never enough time. And then in this episode, there's a couple of things that we want to talk about, particularly some news that's going on with Your Rancher book. There have been some new numbers put out, and it gives an indication as to how the Your Rancher book is growing. So we want to share those numbers with you. And you know what? We have to remind ourselves that this is really the infancy of the revelation. And it's, from a time perspective, believe me, the midwayers are in no hurry. The most highs of Adentia, the faithful of days, are in no hurry here. Melchizedek, even Christ himself, these are not individuals who, like to rush things along. Okay, so yeah, looking at the numbers, remembering that these numbers represent the growth of the revelation. And that's good news. It means that things are happening. You remember when Jerry and I were discussing this on the program, that there is growth. There's exponential growth being fueled a lot by the accessibility of information, and the translations also have expedited growth in. Of course, we also talked about how different parts of the world seem to be embracing it with different levels of enthusiasm. So let's look at the annual report. And it is done in a unique artistic fashion this time around. So we want to give hearty, hearty, hearty thanks to Mo Siegel and also the trustees of the foundation, including Gar Jameson, Marilyn Kuliecki, George Michelson DuPont, Mo Siegel, and Judy Van Cleve. Thank you again for your hard work in crunching the numbers and doing the dedicated work of promoting and distributing the Your Rancher book, the fifth epical revelation around the world. It's a nice, nice thing, historical, relevant. This book will someday have such a profound effect on society that we'll all benefit immensely. I'm convinced of this. So where are we at now? Well, in 2020, and remember, this is during the pandemic. So whatever effect the coronavirus pandemic had on the Your Rancher book. But here are the numbers. 17,761 books were sold in the course of the year. Isn't it amazing that 17,000 people bought the book and there's no advertising? There were 3,855 e-books sold, e-books, electronic books. There were 21,894 books that were distributed that were, sales, gifts, and outreach. And then there were 108,963 books downloaded from Urantia.org, which is wonderful. 20,095 books were downloaded from Apple's app, which is what I have. And then 10,000 books were printed. As far as other things, the Urantia imprint, which I'm not clear what that is, but there were other books that were printed. The Urantia Press imprint label, which sold up just under 2,000, and there were 5,000 reprinted. I just want to see if there's any other information here. Oh, there is. Okay, so Urantia.org. There was a tremendous online presence. There were 1.8 million Urantia book sessions online, 3.5 million page views of the Urantia book, just under 1.1 million new users, and 108,963 Urantia books downloaded. Isn't that amazing? So there is, as I mentioned, you know, the midwayers are not in a hurry, you know. The seed is still being planted, but the soil, you know, we all know about the soil, right? The soil has to be rich. I've asserted on this podcast that the day is going to come when, you know, people will be starving. They're not quite starving right now. You know, you notice, and this is just my own perception, but when the pandemic first hit back in March, there was such great doom. As a matter of fact, I'll tell you a funny story. In the fall before the pandemic, so this would have been October, I was attending a meeting or a conference in Orange County, not far from Disneyland. As a matter of fact, it was right next door to Disneyland. And I remember because as I was driving into the hotel where the convention was being held, I think it might have been a Ramada Inn. It was a large hotel, but nevertheless, I had to go around Disney tourists in order to get to the parking lot. Anyway, it was a big religious convention, the CRB, which is the Christian Religious Broadcasters, or the Convention of Religious Broadcasters. Anyway, so it gives me an opportunity to meet and do business with many clients and the work that I do. And as I'm driving back to my home, which is in Central California, you have to go through Los Angeles. And when you go through Los Angeles, you're coming up on the Interstate 5 freeway, San Bernardino Freeway. And so it kind of snakes you around the back end, and you can see the large downtown metropolis, you know, jetting out of the ground, and it's almost sunset, so the light is setting to the west near the Santa Monica mountain range near Malibu. And from the perpendicular distance in the viewpoint that I had, there was about 20 minutes of me approaching the downtown Los Angeles area. And the sun and the colors, and there was just enough cloud cover. But in my heart, as I'm driving and I'm not listening to any music, there was, and I grew up in Los Angeles, there was something ominous, just struck me as completely and 100% ominous. There was a sense of sadness. I don't know if countenance is the right word, but it came over me, and I'll never forget it. And I said to myself, my goodness, what am I experiencing here? Is it some sort of I'm just getting this feeling that something horrible is about to happen to this place. Lo and behold, 3 months later, you know, we're all talking about a pandemic that's just starting to take place in the United States. And a year and a half later after this, we look now and Los Angeles has been ravaged by homelessness, drug use. There's a new element being introduced into the Southern California area, which is the cartel presence brought on by the massive invasion of the, or not invasion, but just the cartels are using this current border situation as a way of getting drugs in. They're also sending people in who will distribute those drugs. That's how they work off the coyote expenses. Anyway, so it just was interesting to look back and, you know, we all had to really endure. But did much change? Did we change? Did we suddenly realize that our lives are fragile? And did we realize that the weight of our own consumption can be overbearing? to me, the coronavirus was a test in a way on a lot of different levels. But did it, you know, it's like, you know, have you ever had somebody close to you get into an accident and they almost die and they didn't, and you appreciate them because you came that close to having them not there. And so you have a newfound appreciation. And it's the same within your own life. If something happens to you and you get spared, and for the love of angels, you're somehow protected, and you take a greater appreciation of life around you. And that's what this year has been full of, just appreciation. For me personally, on a spiritual level, I do not take for granted. Now, fortunately, nobody close to me experienced coronavirus. However, that's not to say that I know people who are close to me who had people they lost from coronavirus. And it breaks my heart. It breaks my heart. For political reasons, it breaks my heart. For social reasons, and seeing how people usurped power and how unreasonable so many people became. So there were a lot of lessons to be learned, but my biggest concern is that a lot of people did not learn a lot of lessons. They did not learn what I thought they would learn, which is a greater appreciation for humanity and realizing that we can't exist when you've got these governments that are willing to create these things in a lab under the guise of national security when they're playing with people's lives. So, another bit of good news I wanted to share with you. Earlier this week, there was an experiment conducted in a lab which confirmed what the Urantia book stated in 1934. So congratulations again to the authors of the Urantia book. This has to do with the auroras, or the aurora borealis phenomena. Yeah, the story this week was that a controlled experiment proved that electrons from the sun are what caused the Northern Lights phenomena. The news here is that up until this week, it was more or less just a theory since 1947. So the latest development takes it from theory to demonstrable or fact. It is no longer a theory. But the better news for the discerning eye, for those like you and me who know the Urantia book and are familiar, it is very exciting because you now have confirmation. The Urantia book authors were correct. That would be putting it in the validation category. And it predated the confirmation by 87 years. So the Urantia book was not only correct from paper 58, if you want to read about it, it also predates the theory by 14 years. Now, there were people who had a lot of different theories about the Northern Lights and going back even to Galileo's time. But the electron and the charged particles, it was hard to, what was it doing with the ionosphere? Why? But there you go, in 1934, it explains it scientifically. And here we are, we have scientists now that are confirming it in the laboratory 87 years later. So I just think that's interesting and it's fascinating. We may have somebody on to talk about it. In the weeks ahead, I'm trying to get George Park to come back on. Maybe he can share us what he's the gentleman. If you go back a few podcasts, there is a podcast entitled "We Now Know Where God Lives." It's one of the Urantia Book Radio early podcasts, the first 100 series, and it's George Park talking about how he has calculated how far it is between where we are and the Isle of Paradise, which is God's residential home. Interesting, isn't it? And so we're going to take a little break, and then we're going to come back and spend a little bit of time on the subject matter of materialism, and how it pertains to life today, and some wonderfully inspiring statements from the Urantia book Revelation that talks about materialism when we continue. But I thought we'd take a little break, a little musical interlude, and then we'll pick it up where we left off.
This is the end. beautiful friend. This is the end, my only friend, the end of our elaborate plans, the end of everything that stands, the end, no safety or surprise, the end. Can you picture what will be? So live madness and free, desperately in need of some stranger's hand in a desperate land.
One of the things that we were talking about off mic with a close friend of mine last week was on the issue of a question, which I posed to you, which is, do you believe in an orderly universe? Or do you believe the universe is just random, no order, no pattern, just planets and suns whizzing through space with no particular place to go? Sounds like a song. It's really what it comes down to, isn't it? It's a worldview established by that one single question. Do you believe in an orderly universe? That is to say, is the universe of order? Or do you believe the universe operates with purpose, or it is not? Your worldview depends on how you answer that question, and you may not have even actually thought of the question before, so I pose it to you now. So what does it mean to say that the universe is organized? What it means is that everything has a definitive purpose. The universe is a living organism. Have you thought of? Perhaps you have. It is the physical representation of what I think, or what I describe as deity in action. And the reason I say that is simple. If you want to know what God looks like, look at the sky at night, but also look at the earth in the daytime. Everything has its place, including us. Even gravity has its place, holding everything together, including electrons, protons, the Higgs boson particles. You know, think about this for a moment. The planets spinning around a central nucleus, just as atoms spinning around a central nucleus, being held together by gravity. The laws of nature are consistent. That is, as Elon Musk said a few days ago, you know, there's the law of nature and everything else. There's physical laws, and then there's everything else is advisory. But I call it order. That is an orderly universe. And order indicates planning, structure. It indicates intelligent design. So we can propose an idea that if our world is orderly in function, And it's an efficient machine, mind you, just like our bodies are efficient machines. In fact, in one article that I read recently, and in our talks a few podcasts back, a gentleman who wrote the book, Stevenson, who said that DNA proves that there's order because of the way it was structured and the way it works with amino acids and chemical compounds that, when connected, create a reaction. We see life not only has purpose, but it has direction. It asserts itself like a lone flower that peeks out of a cracked desert floor, or a simple bacteria that forms in an inland sea out of seemingly nothing, or a cell that repairs itself after being injured. Think about that for a moment. What is the process that goes on, that occurs in that microorganism, where the cell says, okay, troops, we need to repair ourselves? Is that accident or intentional? You be the judge. So then when we talk about order, what's the next step? Well, if there's order, there's probably duplication. When Jesus stated, in my Father's house are many mansions, from John 14:2, and also from the Urantia Book, paper 30, paragraph 4, he refers to these as spheres of the heavenly kingdom, which could only be other physical worlds of habitation of both spirit as well as mortal, or what they call an in-between morontial sphere of ourselves or others of our kind, will creatures with spirit potential. These are what inhabit the universe, a universe of order. Now that sounds crazy, right? Most religions assert that there is a spiritual kingdom. I'm just taking it to the next level by taking what the Urantia Book says, which says the universe is a living order. It's a society. It has order. It has, you know, the sons of God administer to the universe in the name of the Father. The Spirit of God administers to the sons of God in the form of angels and cherubs and midwares. You know, pause to consider for a moment, just for a moment, that there is a guardian angel assigned to you that will know you in this life and also will know you in the next life. They'll see you as you are now and you as you are later when you ascend on. So that kind of scenario simply implies order or planning. It also asserts we are not the only living beings in the universe. Surprise, surprise. And who was thinking that anyway? That's ancient thought. The one thing I will give credit to, because of all of these movies, is that we all pretty much kind of assume there's probably going to be a day when we discover life. But I'm going to let you in on a little secret. Here it is. You know this. And if you don't know this, you would know this if you read the Urantia Book. You are surrounded by beings you don't see. There are angels, cherubs, even high spirit personalities. They observe you, they help you, they love you because they are all working for the Holy Spirit, which is the second person of deity, God the Spirit, to lead you on that path towards God. Now, is that such a surprise? To me, is it altogether logical that that is the master plan, a master plan and a master planner, and we are the result of that plan, or at least a part of it, just as the stars and the heavens are part of the divine plan. Or as stated in the Urantia Book, paper 108, paragraph 6, section 8, you humans have begun an endless unfolding of an almost infinite panorama, a limitless expanding of never-ending, ever-widening sphere and spheres of opportunity for exhilarating service, matchless adventure, sublime uncertainty, and boundless attainment. When the clouds gather overhead, your faith should accept the fact of the presence of the indwelling spirit fragment of God within you, your very soul, and thus you should be able to look beyond the mists of mortal uncertainty into the clear shining of the sun of eternal righteousness on the beckoning heights of the mansion worlds of time and space. Whew. If you believe in order, then you are merely accepting the premise that life has meaning and purpose, great purpose. Otherwise, order would be futile, without merit, hopeless. Philosophers and theologians have argued for existence for centuries, millennia. Why we're here? What is our purpose? What does life mean? Today's man on the street says there is no meaning. We're here because of natural causation, and life is random, atoms, electrons, molecules, elements circling and spinning. To attach meaning is for our own ego, they say. You know, many of the top influential leaders in the world, academia, and the intelligentsia subscribe to this theory because they assert that there is no proof or disproof. Life just is. To suggest otherwise is merely the mind's attempt to create a story that delights, but is nevertheless rooted in fantasy. Those are my words. In other words, you are praying to nothing. You are worshiping an imaginary object. Your prayers are nothing but desires made by a desperate ego. Now, are we to believe the intellectuals and the secularists? Are they telling us the truth or merely expressing their own lack of imagination? So from paper 195, paragraph 6, section 8, materialism reduces man to a soulless automaton and constitutes him merely an arithmetical symbol finding a helpless place in the mathematical formula of an unromantic and mechanistic universe. But whence comes all this vast universe of mathematics without a master mathematician? Science may expatiate on the conservation of matter, but religion validates the conservation of men's souls. It concerns their experience with spiritual realities and eternal values. So just playing devil's advocate, that's a pretty powerful statement. But according to the materialist, it's just gibberish. They need facts. How about this? Paper 95. To say mind emerged from matter explains nothing. If the universe were merely a mechanism and mind were unapart from matter, we would never have two differing interpretations of any observed phenomenon. The concepts of truth, beauty, and goodness are not inherent in either physics or chemistry. A machine cannot know, much less know truth, hunger for righteousness, and cherish goodness. That's a statement from paper 95. Is that proof? If the universe was uniform, how would humans have differing opinions? Is the differentiation of the human mind evidence that life is more than just material? So let me share with you more insight from the revelators on materialism and whether or not this is all there really is. Again, we go back to paper 195. Science may be physical, but the mind of truth-discerning scientists is at once supermaterial. Matter knows not truth, nor can it love mercy, nor delight in spiritual realities. Mortal convictions based on spiritual enlightenment and rooted in human experience are just as real and certain as mathematical deductions based on physical observations, but on another and higher level. Next paragraph. If men were only machines, they would react more or less uniformly to a material universe. Individuality, much less personality, would be non-existent. Quote, every scientific discovery demonstrates the existence of both freedom and uniformity in the universe. The discoverer was free to make the discovery. The thing discovered is real and apparently uniform, or else it could not have become known as a thing. The scientific method is merely an intellectual yardstick wherewith to measure material adventures and physical achievements. But being material and wholly intellectual, it is utterly useless in the evaluation of spiritual realities and religious experiences. If this were merely a material universe and man only a machine, such a man would be wholly unable to recognize himself as such a machine. Let not your dabblings with the faintly glimpsed findings of relativity disturb your concepts of the eternity and the infinity of God. From paper 195, paragraph 7, section 7. the partially evolved mental mechanism of mortal man is not overshadowed with consistency and wisdom. Man's conceit often outruns his reason and eludes his logic. Man is a material fact of nature. By the way, that last paragraph was kind of a jab, telling us to not get ahead of ourselves. We don't know everything. Quote, man is a material fact of nature, but his life is a phenomena which transcends the material levels of nature in that it exhibits control attributes of mind and the creative qualities of spirit. If universe reality is only one vast machine, then man must be outside of the universe and apart from it in order to recognize such a fact and becomes conscious of the insight of such an evaluation. Science lives by the mathematics of the mind. Music expresses the tempo of the emotions. Religion is the spiritual rhythm of the soul in time-space harmony with the higher and eternal melody measurements of infinity. Wow, that's some incredible writing. Religious experience is something in human life which is truly super mathematical. And there is one final example of how science doesn't always provide answers based on this simple fact. This from paper 12. Technical analysis, scientific observation, does not reveal what a person or a thing can do. For example, water is used effectively to extinguish fire. That water will put out fire is a fact of everyday experience. But no analysis of water could ever be made to disclose such a property. Analysis actually determines that water is composed of hydrogen and oxygen. A further study of these elements discloses that oxygen is really a supporter of combustion and that hydrogen will itself freely burn. And yet these two elements put out fire. You wouldn't predict that from water, would you? Then it goes on to say, your religion is becoming real because it is emerging from the slavery of fear and the bondage of superstition. Your philosophy struggles for emancipation from dogma and tradition. Your science is engaged in the age-long contest between truth and error, while it fights for deliverance from the bondage of abstraction, uncertainty. The slavery of mathematics and the relative blindness of mechanistic materialism. And this, I think, is probably the most important line, maybe one of the most important lines. Mortal man has a spirit nucleus. The mind is a personal energy system existing around a divine spirit nucleus and functioning in a material environment. Such a living relationship of personal mind and spirit constitutes the universal potential of eternal personality. Real trouble, lasting disappointment, serious defeat, or inescapable death can only come after self-concepts presume fully to displace the governing power of the central spirit nucleus, thereby disrupting the cosmic scheme or personality identity. So let's take that first sentence. Mortal man has a spirit nucleus. That is what creates the universal potential of eternal personality. That is what survives otherwise mortal death. The only way you can destroy the central spirit nucleus is to replace it with an obsession with only material realities, a disbelief in anything other than material realities will certainly put an end to your spirit nucleus. And that, by the way, was written by a perfecter of wisdom acting on the authority of the Ancients of Days from the Urantia Book. And we're going to leave it there. And until next time, thank you for joining me on this edition of the Urantia Radio Podcast.